Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC and New York Times columnist Gail Collins is with us now. She's been writing about Arizona Governor Jan Brewer's veto of the bill that would have given businesses the right to discriminate against gay and lesbian customers based on the business owner's religious beliefs and, in general, establish a religious right not to do business with people. Governor Brewer did veto the bill. But Gail raises some inconvenient questions around the episode in her last couple of columns, like why, as the gay rights movement continues to have remarkable success, do abortion rights keep losing ground? And why might the liberal agenda item of public campaign financing have enabled this retrograde bill? Hi, Gail. Welcome back to WNYC.
Thanks. It's always good to be here.
And first, I should remind our listeners, perhaps, that you have firmly established as part of your beat over the years covering cities and states whose politics go truly weird. Texas in your last book, Florida, very dependable in this way. Cincinnati, your hometown, if I remember correctly, which bears its occasional resemblance to Mississippi.
You're right, but it's so losing ground compared to these other places. I used to be able to go there and find something really unique, but now it's fallen totally behind.
We'll leave Albany out of it for the moment. But now Arizona, where in one column you merely call it strange, and the other you say politics appears to be in a permanent state of mental collapse. So what's the bigger Arizona political psychotic break picture here?
It's partly the way the state is structured. It has term limits, so you don't have much continuation in the state legislature. It has strange laws in campaign finance, which would sound sort of ideal, I think, if we looked at them from somewhere else, where for a long time, if you wanted to run and somebody ran against you who got a lot of money, say, from big business, the state would match that for you. So that they sort of took money out of the equation. And the interesting result of that was a ton of these conservative, socially conservative, particularly movements and candidates using this money to, you know, leap up and establish groups and alliances and take over the state legislature. I don't think that would work in New York or even Cincinnati for that matter, but you just have a state in Arizona anyway where you have a lot of people who are kind of isolated. If you've ever been to Surprise, Arizona. It really is a surprise. It's just long acres and acres and acres of just houses, people who just arrived from someplace else, and it doesn't have much of a permanent political culture to fall back on. So all these things together have given it a politics that's very dependent right now on the social right, and they do some very strange things.
I've actually been to both surprises, Surprise Arizona, and did you know there's a Surprise New York? I have a friend who's building a house there. It's a nice little woodsy community south of Albany. So, Surprise, there's a Surprise New York.
There's a Surprise. I did not know that. Thank you, Brian.
But your first column on this asked, relevant to what you were just describing, how often do you find yourself saying, go entrenched interests of the business community?
Not often for me, anyway.
But it winds up in the Arizona context that the business community is a force for moderation compared to the fringy, isolated individuals from places like Surprise who get empowered by public financing in that state's context, is your point, right?
Yeah, and the interesting thing that we learned from the fight over this gay rights bill, which is a very peculiar bill, in that the legislators made it very clear, unlike most states where they're sort of more suave about stuff like this, that this was because in a neighboring state, a wedding photographer had refused to take pictures of a gay couple's wedding and had then been sued. And they wanted to get back at that. And it's weird for Arizona because Arizona doesn't have gay marriage. And in fact, it doesn't have any laws protecting gay couples that would allow them to sue even if somebody wouldn't sell them a Valentine. So it was a totally, even if you wanted to accomplish this result, unnecessary law that was just sort of like a slap in your face.
In fact, I was struck by Governor Brewer's veto statement in that she really didn't attack the notion of this law as being offensive or discriminatory or trying to set up a new Jim Crow where different groups of people based on their identity have to be served at different businesses, separate and unequal. She really almost seemed to defend the idea behind the law and just say it's not necessary because we can always do it. Here's a clip.
I have not heard of one example in Arizona where a business owner's religious liberty has been violated. The bill is broadly worded and could result in unintended and negative consequences. After weighing all of the arguments, I have vetoed Senate Bill 1062 moments ago.
So, Gail Collins, my guest from the New York Times, did you hear her veto statement the way I did?
Yeah, she basically is saying, yes, I mean, we can already discriminate against gay couples. We don't need additional help to be able to do it. The other interesting thing to me about the result of the whole thing was that the business community was, I mean, of course, the gay community was very upset and naturally spoke out, but it was the business community just roared in outrage, partly because the interesting thing about the gay rights movement is that now it's become something that in most states businesses see as a good thing for business.
Yep.
And it's just it was just so funny that and also the business community in Arizona is so outraged because they've been cut out by the social right and they no longer have the power they used to in the state legislature. And, so between the two things, it was very interesting.
And just to put a finer audio point on that, you recommended in your column that people watch a certain interview of an Arizona state lawmaker on CNN to get an example of who our public campaign tax dollars are publicly financing. So we are glad to accommodate this being radio. Here is 46 seconds of Anderson Cooper interviewing Arizona State Senator Al Melvin. Anderson Cooper speaks first.
So no florist in Arizona is going to be forced to participate in a gay wedding because, A, you don't have gay weddings in Arizona, and you're not going to anytime soon, and, B, under Arizona law, it's okay to discriminate against a gay person and refuse them service already. So that's two reasons why no person of faith is going to be forced to interact with a gay person at their wedding. It's not going to happen in Arizona.
With all due respect, sir, I don't know of anybody in Arizona that would discriminate against a fellow human being. No Christian or,
really,
or
nobody?
Jew that I know of.
I know people in New York who
not that
discriminate
I know of.
Plenty. Really, there's nobody? Discrimination doesn't exist in Arizona?
Well, maybe you ought to move to Arizona. We're more people-friendly here, apparently.
Apparently, Gail. So did anyone ask?
This is, by the way, an excellent example of why you should never put a state senator on public or television.
On national television.
On national television.
On national television. And I wondered if anyone asked Senator Melvin or any one of his colleagues in the same camp about other religious discrimination scenarios that his bill would presumably have legalized or that, as Anderson Cooper and Governor Brewer suggest, might already be legal in Arizona. The male Muslim cab driver of a certain fundamentalist stripe who might refuse to pick up a passenger if she was a woman traveling alone, you know, based on his religious beliefs. Can they do that? Would he defend that?
Cooper asked, could a banker who believed in the sanctity of marriage so much that he didn't want to do business with a divorced woman or an unmarried mother refuse a loan on the basis of his religious beliefs? And, you can guess the senator didn't have a very good answer for that one either.
Yeah.
I think it's true. I don't know how far this can go because it's never been tested. But it's very interesting to me that this is... We have to thank Arizona for making this issue so completely crystal clear. Normally, the lawmakers, even at states, who pass this kind of stuff are more discreet about what it is they're doing, but not in Arizona.
So now comes the disturbing question that you based your second column on this around, which is why do the fortunes of the abortion rights movement seem to sink even as the fortunes of the gay rights movement seem to be rising consistently? And the conclusion that you come to is that lawmakers know abortion restrictions only hurt poor people. Why is it a class issue?
If you think about it, it's totally true. What they do now in most states when they're trying to restrict abortions is to pass things under the guise of health laws that make it very difficult for clinics to operate because their doctors can't get admitting privileges in local hospitals. Arizona wants to do surprise inspections by the health department on the clinics, which is a terrible privacy issue. If you have to have long waiting times, that means that women who come from someplace else who have to drive a long way to get an abortion, for instance, will have to live in hotels for several days, which is a matter of money. It just makes things really hard and really difficult. And none of that stuff is a problem if you're in a middle-class family who can just afford to, you know, get on a train or get on a plane and go to the next state that has open abortions. It's something that really messes things up for poor women who need access in their communities to abortion. And they're the only ones who really are punished for this. And so it makes it very easy. And it's the opposite of the gay rights movement, where people are realizing more and more and more that gay Americans not only bring a lot of other advantages, they tend to have some money. And for the business community, they're very interesting.
And so the business community, go-entrenched interest of the business community, is not likely to include their rallying around abortion rights, or as you put it in your column, I don't expect the National Football League to be defending abortion rights anytime soon, since they were starting to suggest that they might move next year's Super Bowl out of Arizona if they pass that anti-gay law. And you point out that low-income women are five times more likely to have an unintended pregnancy than their affluent sisters. So is part of the point simply that Republicans don't get votes from low-income women anyway, so they can make political hay on other people's feelings about them?
That's true, and it's also nobody gets the poorer you are, the less likely you are to vote in general. The less money you're going to donate to a campaign. Certainly, there's just the amount of feedback, the amount of plus results you get from doing something that makes middle class people happy. It's no secret that, you know, Barack Obama ran his last campaign, and even the one before that, about the middle class. It's only very recently he started talking about poor people. That's just what you do, because the middle class is where the votes are. It's where the money is. And, you know, working on stuff for poor people just doesn't have that much of a positive economic consequence.
Now, in the midterm elections, the Democrats seem to be planning another war on women offensive against the Republicans. Planned Parenthood just announced major political spending for this year. But is this for state legislatures, do you happen to know, where the abortion rights action seems to be not just Congress, where the media focuses more attention?
It depends. I mean, there's been a great sudden realization on the part, particularly of the Democratic Party, that if you kind of let the states go and just concentrate on Congress, you're suddenly going to have all these state legislatures who are, as they have been, redistricting their states so that the congressional districts are designed in a way to tip Republican. So there's a lot more interest in the state's elections than there used to be. You've got a lot more money sort of being directed at states. So I wouldn't be surprised if this doesn't go down to the states, too. I mean,
and so we have people like Wendy Davis in Texas rising to more prominence than they may have had a few years ago.
Yeah, Wendy Davis is, like everyone assumed, that the first great hope for the Democrats to do anything whatsoever in Texas would be the a strong Latino candidate. But Wendy Davis is the first one out of the block. I don't think that many people think she's going to win, but if she does well, it's going to mean a new day in Texas.
And that 2010, that redistricting point that you mentioned is so important, because I think what happened in 2010 is that there was the big backlash against Obamacare and the stimulus at the height of the early Tea Party movement that wound up in this sweep of not just the House of Representatives, the Republicans taking it from the Democrats, but state legislatures and governorships all over the country. And that gave them, because it happened to come in a census year, 2010, that gave them the power to then go ahead and redistrict the congressional districts all over the country. So now we're in this situation, I guess, for the next decade, where even though a majority of Americans voted for Democrats, you know, nationwide, in the last House elections, Republicans have a solid majority. And it's because of the districts and the timing of that 2010 election, isn't it?
It is, and it's also it's easy for the Republicans to do this because Democrat the most deep division politically in the country is between the crowded places and the empty places. And the more crowded your place, the more Democratic it is. The more empty your place, the more Republican it is.
One of the main themes of your Texas book.
Yes, it was. Thank you. And because of that, the Republicans it's easier already for Republicans to elect more people to Congress because they tend to spread out more. Democrats tend to all squish together so that you have these districts that just parts of the country that are just wildly, densely populated with Democrats. So the Democrats need all the help they can get in terms of congressional districts. And for the last couple of sequences, they've been getting just the opposite. They've been getting all these states that have been very happily drawing the lines to make sure they don't do well. That's going to be a big deal.
Back to Arizona for just a second.
And I always like to go back to Arizona.
And as much as there was just anti-gay animus motivating this, is there a religious liberty question that deserves a moment of our attention? I mean, when it comes to gay weddings, for example, should you be able to sue florists or bakers or caterers who don't want to be associated with that out of their religious beliefs, no matter what we may think of their religious beliefs?
Yeah, I got to tell you, I think you can. You should be able to. It's the difference to me anyway is the difference between the public and the private sphere. If you don't believe in gay weddings, you don't believe in gay marriages, you know, God bless you, you've got every right in the world to go to a church that preaches that. You've got every right to preach it yourself. You've got every right to argue it in your community, but what you don't have a right to do is to establish a public access business and then say this business, which is open to the public, is not open to these particular groups because I don't like them. It's a slippery slope. Yeah, it really is. I don't usually like slippery slopes, but that one is really, 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 really slippery. You suddenly decide you don't like, divorce people. You don't like people who work for Planned Parenthood. You don't like people who are living together without being married. It just goes on and on and on.
Gail Collins, New York Times op-ed columnist and author of As Texas Goes, How the Lone Star State Hijacked the American Agenda. Gail, great conversation. Thank you so much.
Great to talk to you.